ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमः। So we welcome all the devotees to the morning Srimad Bhagavatam class. We are on Canto 10, Chapter 15, Text number 26 today. Prayachatani na Krishna Gandhalobhita Chetasam Vanchasti Mahati Rama Gamyatam Yadi Rochate. Translation and purport by the servants of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: O Krishna, please get those fruits for us. Our minds are so attracted by their aroma. Dear Balram, our desire to have those fruits is very great. If you think it's a good idea, let's go to that Tal forest. Purport: Although neither man nor bird nor beast could even approach the Tal forest, the cowherd boys had so much faith in Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram that they took it for granted that the two lords could effortlessly kill the sinful ass demons and acquire the delicious Tal fruits. Lord Krishna's cowherd boyfriends are exalted, self-realized souls who would not ordinarily become greedy for sweet fruits. In fact, they are simply joking with the Lord and enthusing his pastimes, urging him to perform unprecedented heroic feats in the Tal forest. Innumerable demons disturbed the sublime atmosphere of Vrindavan during Lord Krishna's presence there, and the Lord would kill such demons as a popular daily event. Since Lord Krishna had already killed many demons, on this particular day, he decided to give first honors to Lord Balaram, who would demolish the first demon, Dhenuka. By the words Yadi Rochate, the cowherd boys indicate that Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram need not kill the demon simply to satisfy them. Them is the cowherd boys. Rather, they, Krishna and Balaram, should do so only if the lords themselves found the concept appealing. So we'll just read the translation once more. So here is a wonderful description of the loving exchanges that happen between Krishna, the Supreme Lord, Lord Balaram, the first expansion, and their dear devotees. It's mutual give and take. Sometimes Krishna offers them pleasure and they enjoy. Sometimes they offer pleasure to Krishna and Krishna enjoys. So today we are seeing how in the last line of the shloka it is mentioned, Gamyatam Yadi Rochate. And in the purport also, this point is highlighted that after explaining Gandha Lobhita Chetasam, Lobha is a very common word. So Lobha means greed. In yesterday's shloka, His Grace Vaisheshika Prabhu was very nicely describing how it was mentioned in the purport. It is mentioned that in the month of Bhadra, there are nice easterly winds blowing and that are carrying the aroma. So they express that, oh, this aroma is so nice, it is so beautiful and we want these fruits. But at the end, in today's shloka we see, they say, Gamyatam Yadi Rochate. They say, if you wish, let us all go there and we'll enjoy the fruits. So there is a long description of how their consciousness has been captured by the sweet fruits. They want to eat it. They have full faith in Krishna and Balaram that if Krishna and Balaram have killed so many demons till now, what is this ass demon? They don't have any doubts about that. Still, somehow at the end of it, they will write that last line. Yes, we have expressed our wishes. We have expressed our desires. This is what I feel, we feel we should do. But at the end, finally, it is your supreme will that counts. Gamyatam yadi rochate. If you feel that this is good for us, definitely we'll go there. They have their own desires, they have their own plans, and they don't mind expressing those plans to the Lord. But the golden difference between our expression of our plans to Krishna and the pure devotees, the gopas, expression of their plans to Krishna is, when we express our plans to Krishna, we say, so now you have understood what my plans are, you have understood what my desires are, please do the needful. But when the gopas, they express their desires, at the end they say, all right, so we have expressed our desires, now please, you decide whether it should be done or it should not be done. This is a very nice thing that we can learn from the gopas of Vrindavan. All of us have our free will. And Krishna, he especially does not like us to not make use of our free will. If someone gifts you some gift, let's say it's somebody's birthday, appearance day, and some friend gives you a beautiful watch, he says, this is my loving gift to you. And some days pass after that, and then he sees that this person is not still using that gift, that watch, on his wrist. So he asks, no, you don't use that watch. He says, no, I don't use it. Now, if somebody gifts you something, he wants you to use it, is it not? Similarly, Krishna has gifted us free will. So, he does not prefer and he does not practice using force on us to make us devotees. He will come himself. He will give us the message of the Gita. He will send his pure devotees. And all these are methods to convince us without Krishna's involvement in our lives, we won't do good. But this is never forced on us. No acharya will catch our throat and say, you better become a devotee of Krishna, otherwise I'll thrash you, I'll kill you. Krishna himself does not do that. So then this free will is given to you and me. It is given to every living entity here. What is the best use of this free will? The best use of this free will is using the free will that we have got, we surrender it to Krishna back and say, I'm using my free will, but at the end I want to know, what do you expect from me? You have given me this gift, but what do you expect me to do with that gift? Do you expect me to wear it? Do you expect me to give it to somebody else? Do you expect me to give it back to you? So seldom times we will ask the person who has given us the gift that how does he wish us to use that gift. Usually we may not use that gift if it does not fit into our plans, or we will use it if it fits into our plans. But the best use of a gift is you accept the gift lovingly and again as a gesture of love ask him, thank you so much for the gift that you have given me. How do you wish me to use that gift? Is it not? So that is what we find in Vrindavan Leela, that all the devotees, they make amazing plans to serve Krishna, the gopis, the gopas, but it is all with a singular purpose. How will Krishna be pleased? They are using God-given intelligence to serve God. So that is something that is very important here. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his discussion of the 10 offenses against the holy name, he is discussing the first offense, to blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated their lives for propagating the holy names of the Lord, sadhu ninda. So in that he describes what is sadhu ninda. He is giving further explanation of sadhu ninda. So he says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Leela, 22nd chapter, shloka number 78, 79 and 80. These shlokas Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is describing to Sanatana Goswami the 26 qualities of a devotee. So it starts with Kripalu, Akrita Droha. Kripalu is merciful. Akrita Droha is he will not engage in defiance. He's a non-defiant person. If you tell him something, he will do it. Satya Sar, he's a truthful person. He's Sama, equal. Nidosha, faultless. Vadanya, magnanimous. And so on. So he is saying that in this way there are 26 qualities of a devotee. One quality he mentions somewhere in the middle of that list is Krishnaika Sharana. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says when we are talking of Sadhu Ninda, we should also know who is a Sadhu. Otherwise we will not be able to practice this principle of not engaging in Sadhu Ninda. So that's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur brings up this point, and that's why we are bringing up this point in today's class. He mentions that there are the other 25 qualities and there is this one quality called Krishnaika Sharana. Now we would expect all 26 qualities to be in the behavior of some devotee. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out of all these 26 qualities, the most important quality is Krishnaika Sharana, taking exclusive shelter of Krishna. Krishna Eka Sharana. It's not taking shelter of Krishna along with so many. Exclusive shelter of Krishna. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out to us that if a devotee has this quality of Krishnaika Sharana and he may not have the other 25 qualities, you and me will be tempted to see numerically he is supposed to have 26 qualities. But he just has one quality and 25 qualities are absent. He is not Kripalu, he is not Satyasar, he is not Nidosh, he is not Vadanya. We might be tempted to see him as an ordinary person and we might do ninda of such a person. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, especially in that explanation he gives, he says we should be very careful. Even if a devotee lacks all of the other 25 qualities or any one of the other 25 qualities, the quality of Krishnaika Sharana is sufficient to call him a sadhu. And ninda of such a person is an offense against the holy name. So we want to focus on this quality of Krishnaika Sharana. A devotee who is practicing Krishnaika Sharana, he's taking exclusive shelter of Krishna. Why will somebody take exclusive shelter of Krishna? Yes, Krishna is a great personality. But when will I reject any other master and accept only Krishna as a master if I am convinced of his highest position? If I feel that amongst the number of demigods, he is also one of the demigods, I may be tempted to take shelter of anybody else also, is it not? It means somebody who has taken Krishnaika Sharana, exclusive shelter of Krishna, he has fully understood Lord Krishna's position. He understands the tattva regarding Krishna. And if he understands the tattva regarding Krishna, he also understands that Krishna is the Supreme Father and all of us are his parts and parcels. So somebody who takes exclusive shelter of Krishna has proper understanding of Krishna Tattva and he has also proper understanding of Jiva Tattva. Naturally, all the other 25 qualities will soon manifest in him because he sees the other living entities as the sons, as the daughters of the Supreme Lord who knows he's the Supreme Lord. That's why he's taking Krishnaika Sharana. Very soon he'll manifest Kripalu. Very soon he'll manifest Akrita Droha. Very soon, he'll manifest Vadanya, Satyasar, and so on. Is it not? Since he is taking exclusive shelter of Krishna, another consequence of that is he will not take any decision in his life without first seeking Krishna's approval, Krishna's representative's approval, placing it at least in front of the Lord or his representative for consideration. Now Krishna on his own may say, no, whatever you do is right. The spiritual master may say, no, whatever you do is right. But from the devotee's side, he will always place it in front of the Lord. Why? Because he has taken exclusive shelter of Krishna. We want to focus on this word, exclusive. There is no one else for him who is worthy of placing the matter in front of whom for consideration. So he will always do that. Chanakya Pandit in one of his Niti Shloka says, the cuckoo is a black bird, But one very beautiful quality is its sweet voice. The woman is usually dependent on the man, but one very sweet quality of a woman is that by her chastity, she controls the husband. The ugly man does not look very beautiful, but he becomes very attractive by his scholarship. So these are the three things that he mentions. Similarly, we can say that sometimes a devotee may not have other attractive qualities which may be worthy of being glorified. But just like Chanakya Pandit is pointing out special quality of a kaku, the woman, and an ugly man, we can point out that the special quality of a devotee is that he takes exclusive shelter of Krishna. There is a very, very beautiful shloka in the 10th chapter where the Vedas are glorifying Krishna. So they say that they are mentioning, it's just a small line there. There are many lines in that compilation of shloka. So that last line mentions, just as a man's footsteps, whether they fall on mud, bricks or stone, all these are different manifestations of earth. So how can somebody say that I am not taking shelter of the earth? Yes, he's physically putting his foot on the mud, sometimes on bricks, sometimes on a stone. Finally, he has to take shelter of the earth. He cannot not take shelter of the earth, is it not? Even if somebody wants to jump, he has to exert pressure on the earth. He takes help of the earth to lift off the earth. Similarly, somebody who really understands who Krishna is, he never excludes the presence of Krishna, the will of Krishna from anything that he does, because he understands Krishna is the basis of everything. I may not be able to see tangibly the presence of Krishna in the things around me, in people around me, but just like earth is the basis for mud, bricks or stone, similarly Krishna is the basis of everything. So every decision that he takes, he places the matter in front of Krishna for consideration. He understands Krishna is the foundation. Taking permission before you do something, even in ordinary culture, this is a sign of a refined gentleman, is it not? I have my opinions, I have my plans, but I wish to ask you, what will please you? What would you want me to do? If you feel it is all right, I will do it. But finally, I have to get your approval. So because a devotee always places his wishes, always takes into consideration Krishna's perspective, that's why he earns the trust of Krishna. Somebody had sent me a small SMS. It was saying that there are two concepts in a relationship. There is love and there is trust. And this SMS mentioned that trust is a higher concept than love. So there was not much explanation there. It was just saying this. So just to take this point up here, we know that Krishna loves everyone, is it not? As his parts and parcels, Krishna loves everyone. But does Krishna trust everyone? Because Krishna is the Supreme Father, out of love, you know, father has natural love for the children. Sometimes we have seen in this world when the child is not a good child, a child is not an obedient child, still the mother has very nice affection for the child, is it not? Similarly, Krishna, as a Supreme Father, he loves everyone. However, some of his children are not really recognizing Krishna's position as a Supreme Father, and sometimes they may defy him, they may go against his will. Krishna has expressed his will in the scriptures, but they go against him. And Krishna, out of love, may still shower his compassion on them. But some of his children, amongst the millions of his children, they understand his wishes, they understand his desires that are mentioned in the scriptures, and mold their lives accordingly. Such people not only earn the love of Krishna, not only they receive the love of Krishna, they earn, they deserve the trust of Krishna. So somebody may receive someone else's love out of compassion. Someone in a relationship may receive somebody else's love out of mercy. Bichara hai, chalo, let me give my love to him. But to give trust to somebody deserves a lot of hard work, is it not? So trust is a higher concept than love. If somebody tells you, I love you, that is definitely a compliment. But when somebody tells you, I trust you, that is a higher compliment than I love you. Yes? So since devotees, they are Krishnaika Sharanam, whenever they do something, they use their free will, but at the end, they make the highest use of that free will, that they surrender that free will to Krishna or his bona fide representative, they become trustworthy children of Krishna. They become special children of Krishna. We all, at different stages of our sadhana, have definitely received the love of Krishna. But to earn the trust of Krishna, we have to make certain adjustments to our attitude, certain adjustments to our lives. Above our temple, there are these solar panels that are used to take sunlight and heat water for the kitchen. If you notice, the solar panels are inclined at a certain angle. Yes? Usually we, even in outside, when you see the solar panels are inclined at a certain angle. Now we see the sun changes its position throughout the day, from east to west. So if you see any solar panel throughout the world, it will always be in the direction of north to south, never to miss a single ray of Krishna, of the sun, because the sun travels from east to west. If it is facing east, then only in the morning it will receive in the west. It will receive only in the evening time. So a solar panel has to be placed very properly at a certain angle so that the maximum rays can be caught. Similarly, Krishna's mercy is for everyone, but we have to position ourselves properly to receive that grace. It's very important for us to have proper attitude to receive his grace. If somebody is born and brought up on listening to some ordinary film songs, pop songs, yes, they don't have any meaning. It's just some lyrics adjusted and some attractive music being played. So if somebody has never listened to quality music, if somebody has never listened to meaningful songs, he will never appreciate the philosophy and the thoughts and the emotions that are expressed in refined poetry, even mundane poetry, is it not? Similarly, if you and me always practice devotional service in the mood of it's good to chant, it's good to participate, but we never refine our attitude, we never actually work towards positioning ourselves properly to receive Krishna's mercy, we will never become trustworthy servants of Krishna. We'll always be recipients of the mercy aspect of Krishna. But we saw how trust is a higher concept than love, mercy, compassion. So, I would like to express that, what is advancement? Here we see that the gopas are also attracted to the fruits, the sweet aroma of the fruits. Gandha, lobhita, chetasam. Lobha, they are falling prey to lobha. Yes? So advancement for you and me is not when we do not feel the pull of the senses. It's not that we are free from desires. Real advancement, true advancement is when we feel the pull of senses, the first reaction is, let me take shelter of Krishna. Let me take more intense shelter of my existing practices. I have been chanting Hare Krishna for a long, long time, but I never put energy into chanting. So usually our understanding of a pure person may be, he's never affected by anger, he's never affected by lust, he's never affected by envy, he's never affected by illusion. Yes, in a very high stage, that's true, that happens. But if you and me just take this as a standard of purity, then in one sense, you know, we might feel, where am I? I'm full of anger, I'm full of lust, I'm full of illusion. What is the hope for me? So for you and me, it becomes a better standard. Am I really advancing? The real test of advancement is not that we are free from desires. The real test of advancement is when we feel these vagas, Where do we turn our face to? Do we turn our face to satisfying those urges? One. Second, do we turn our face to fighting those urges? Two. Three, do we turn our face to Krishna, take more intense shelter of our practices, try to become trustworthy, try to surrender our free will to Krishna? Krishna, I'm feeling these urges, what do you expect from me? So taking shelter of Krishna is the best standard, because eventually it will empower you with everything that is necessary to fight those urges, and it will also lead you to that stage where those urges no longer can even touch you. Yes? So for a sadhaka, the readiness, the willingness to take shelter of the spiritual master, to take shelter of the Supreme Lord, is a better standard of advancement than just his own purity, that I am not affected by any of these anarthas. That's why we see in Vedic culture, there is shelter provided to five entities. Old men, old personalities, children, cows, women, and brahmanas. All these five will be given shelter because it's easy in a sheltered environment to do the right thing. Few people can do the right thing when there is no shelter. So Vedic culture, in order to encourage people to become more and more refined, they provide more facilities for taking shelter. Yes, the highest expectation is purity, but to reach that purity, suitable facilities are provided also in Vedic culture. That is refined culture. Refined culture is not just stating the objectives. We would expect people in our culture to be supremely pure, to be free from all vices. What about the facilities that you are offering to people to practice to reach that stage? So that is what is the refinedness of Vedic culture. Krishna says in the Gita, Ye yatha mam prapadyante, tam sathaiva bhajami aham. Krishna says, I reciprocate with my devotees. So just like devotees take shelter of Krishna, they want the will of Krishna as the final word before taking any step in their life. Krishna also, in reciprocation to his pure devotees who are trustworthy, he tries to take their opinion for his activities. So many times in the scriptures it comes that Krishna seeks permission of his devotees to do certain things. One very prominent example is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taking the permission of devotees, especially Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, before he wanted to leave for South India. And so many times when he was requested to stay back, he did not go. He stayed back. Lord Krishna, after the Mahabharata war, when everything was settled, he wanted to move to Dwarka. He was about to move, and Queen Kunti, she requested, please don't go. What about us? Please stay. Krishna extended his stay. He first wanted to take permission of his devotees before going ahead. In Govardhan Leela, Krishna explains how it is best to worship Govardhan. At the end, he places the matter for consideration in front of Nanda Maharaj, and he says, if you wish, then I suggest that we should do Govardhan Puja. So he suggests his everything, his plan, his opinion. At the end, he says, Nanda Maharaj, you decide now. We'll speak one small story from one of the devotees to highlight this point. We had recently gone to Guruvayur, and there are these two wonderful devotees there. So one devotee who is a local devotee there is called Puntanam. And one devotee who is a local devotee there is Melpathur Narayana Bhattathiri. So this Melpathur Narayana Bhattathiri, he was a very big scholar. And this Puntanam was a very simple devotee. So one time this Puntanam, he composed a set of prayers glorifying Lord Krishna. That is the main temple there. And those prayers are called Gyanapanna. So he thought that let me show these prayers to this scholarly person, and if there is something to be improved, it can happen. So he showed his prayers to this Narayana Bhattathiri. So Narayana Bhattathiri, when he saw those prayers, he said, oh, you have written these prayers in Malayalam? I am a scholar of Sanskrit. First you go, you learn Sanskrit, then you compose some prayers in Sanskrit. That is something refined. Then you come to me. So this Puntanam, he thought, all right, he's a humble devotee, so he walks off. And he's thinking what to do now, how to learn Sanskrit. Meanwhile, the next day, Narayana Bhattathiri sits for writing some Sanskrit poetry. He's a scholar. He has composed thousands of original verses glorifying Krishna, glorifying Lord Narayan. Just like in Chaitanya Leela also, we know Keshav Kashmiri, such an amazing scholar. On the fly, he composed 100 verses originally in Sanskrit glorifying Ganga Devi. So he sits for composing original verses. But that day, somehow, his intelligence goes blank. He cannot compose a single verse throughout the day. At the end of the day, he has not composed a single verse. This itself is a shattering experience for his ego. For somebody who's writing verses after verses, if you cannot compose a single verse in a single day. So he's already crushed and he's thinking, what happened? Why am I not able to? But still it does not hit him. He does not understand what has happened. As he's trying to contemplate why it happened like this, a small young boy comes and sits next to him. So he says, what happened? Why are you looking so dejected? So he says, I am not able to compose any verse today. I am such a big scholar. So this small boy says, hey, you are a scholar, so you already composed so many shlokas, you already composed so many Sanskrit verses. So they are there. Why are you feeling so sad? Show me some of those verses. So the boy takes that book where he has composed his original verses. And as he looks at those verses, he says, well, this is a little bit wrong here. This can be corrected here. This shloka does not look very beautiful. And there is a fault here. And he comes out with so many mistakes in his existing composition. So already he is crushed because he cannot compose any shloka. Now this is another blow. Yes, his pride was, you know, bits and pieces because he could not compose a shloka. Now this boy pulverizes it to fine powder by saying that there are already so many faults in your existing composition. Something happens. He gets up and falls flat. He offers full prostrated obeisances to this boy. We don't know what was in his mind, but probably he understood there is something divine here. So as he gets up after offering obeisances, that boy is no longer there. He had come to do his job. Yes, to remind him. He does not want to give his extra darshan to somebody who does not deserve that. So he vanishes. And then as he's looking around confused, there's a voice from the sky which says, you want to compose verses again? You want to show your scholarship again? First find out that devotee called Puntanam. Fall flat at his feet. Beg his mercy. Try to understand the fine emotions that he has expressed in his composition. And after you understand his feelings, his emotions, his offering to Krishna, then maybe you will be able to compose some shlokas glorifying me. So Narayan Bhattatri understands this is a life and death situation. So he searches for Puntanam. He falls at his feet. And Puntanam is thinking, what is this? He does not know anything. And he's still trying to think how he'll learn Sanskrit. So he says, no, show me your Malayalam shlokas. So no, but you said, you know, they are not up to the standard. No, they are very nice. And actually, because he has been crushed, he is very humble now. He reads those Malayalam shlokas composed by Puntanam. And he appreciates those shlokas like anything. The love that Puntanam had expressed in those simple Malayalam shlokas was much better than the exquisite words that Narayana Bhattathiri had used in his Sanskrit original verses. From Krishna's perspective, those verses were very much sweeter, more sweeter than his shlokas. Krishna mentioned to Narayana Bhattathiri, Puntanam's bhakti is much more sweeter to me than your knowledge of vibhakti. In Sanskrit, you know, there is this vibhakti, prathama, dvitiya, tritiya, ramah, ramau, ramah, ramam, ramau, raman, ramena, ramabhyam. That is how you use the word rama in a different forms. It's called vibhakti. That's from where your study of Sanskrit starts. So Krishna is saying, somebody may be very expert in this Sanskrit grammar, vibhakti, but for me, bhakti is higher than vibhakti. And to tell you something very special, this Narayana Bhattathiri, after he surrendered to Puntanam, and he appreciated Puntanam's Malayalam poetry. After that, he got the empowerment from Krishna to compose a set of glorification verses called the Narayaniyam. If anybody is from Kerala, South India, then he knows there is a very wonderful book glorifying Krishna called the Narayaniyam. And many Malayalam people, they will chant those shlokas every day, glorifying Lord Krishna. But how did Narayana Bhattathiri get empowerment? He got empowerment after he learned this lesson, although in a very harsh way. Yes? This Narayaniyam was composed in this Guruvayur temple of Lord Krishna, like that. So, Krishna, not only he takes shelter of his devotees, but when he sees some scholar becoming proud, he wants that scholar also to first take shelter of his trustworthy devotee. Unless you take shelter, unless you understand his mood, you will not be able to compose any of your own shlokas like that. This is the positive mood. I would also like to take the other case. After Dhruv Maharaj performs his austerities and the Supreme Lord, Lord Prishnigarbha, appears to him, he grants him his boons, and when the Lord disappears from there, mounted on Garuda, it is mentioned that Dhruv Maharaj is very morose. Now, throughout the Bhagavatam, when you will see that some devotee prayed for the darshan of Krishna and then Krishna appeared to him, that is the height, the zenith of his happiness. Which devotee will be morose after he gets darshan of Krishna? But it is mentioned that Dhruv is morose after he gets darshan of Krishna. So, Maitreya is instructing Vidura. So then Vidura asks, he's telling him the story. So then Vidura asks, did you mention that Dhruva was morose? How come he was morose after taking the darshan of the Lord? So it is explained how Dhruva was thinking, I had these two wonderful opportunities. A wonderful spiritual master like Narad Muni and the Supreme Lord himself both appeared in front of me. What did I do? Instead of placing my opinion in front of them for their approval, for their consideration, must be that I was too much attached to my opinions. And that's why the Supreme Lord, when he appeared in front of me, within 6 months, so many yogis, they have to practice austerities for thousands of years and still Krishna does not appear. I practiced austerity under the guidance of my spiritual master for 6 months. Krishna appeared in front of me. But what did Krishna give to me? Krishna gave me 36,000 years of rule on the earth planet without a deterioration of my senses. No old age. You will remain youthful. He granted me the position much higher than my great-grandfather, which I desired. So although when Krishna appeared in front of him, he said, I was looking for broken pieces of glass. Kachat pichinman, varam nayachet. Now I have found a diamond. But what did Krishna do to him? Krishna gave him those boons, and that's why it is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam that Dhruv Maharaj felt lamentation. It is mentioned that Dhruv Maharaj was thinking, I had a particular motivation, and for that motivation I underwent service. I chanted the Vishnu mantra. So Krishna is so kind that he saw my service, but he also saw my motivation. Out of my service, he immediately came within 6 months and granted me the boon that after this lifetime, yes, you will attain the supreme planet. But also, he noted my motivation for doing that service, and he also granted me 36,000 years of rule on this planet. I don't want this. Now I want the Supreme Lord. But he must have noted the strong desire that I had for that position, that I want a post greater than my great-grandfather, and that revengeful attitude towards my brother. He feels that I chanted Vishnu mantra. I chanted the Supreme Lord's names, and the Supreme Lord's names should never be chanted for material motives. But I did that. That's why Lord Krishna has actually punished me by giving me sovereignty over this earth planet. About my spiritual master appeared to me, and we know how Narad Muni first tries to dissuade him from his tapasya. He says, oh, you are just a small child. Why do you take insults so seriously? Please go back. So he remembers that at that time, and he says, Narad Muni told me, why are you taking that insult so seriously? But what did I do? Taking not proper advantage of such a wonderful personality as spirit as Narad Muni, I told him, no, that's all right. What you are saying is true, but it does not touch my heart. I want to take revenge against my stepmother. I want to take proper action against those arrow-like words of my stepmother. So actually, I forced my spiritual master to give me something to fulfill my wishes. My wish for my selfish enjoyment was so strong that even though the Supreme Lord appeared in front of me, I am telling him, I don't want now. I had a desire before, but now when I am seeing you, I am purified. But no, Krishna gave him that. So that's why there is a series of 6 verses there where Dhruva Maharaj expresses his lamentation and he says, it's just like somebody approaches an emperor and the emperor says, what do you want? And you ask for some grains. A few grains if you ask from the emperor, he says. So he expresses his lamentation. So here is a case of somebody who finds that he did not place his free will in front of Krishna, in front of the spiritual master for his approval. And we saw in the beginning of the class how the gopas, they have their own plans. They make full use of their free will. But at the end, they place it for consideration. Is it not? Here it was mentioned in today's purport that for the first time in the Vrindavan Leela till now, which we have discussed, Krishna gives the first honor to Balaram to kill this demon, Dhenuka. Krishna does not kill. Till now, Krishna has killed different demons. So the reason that is given is that Dhenuka in his previous life was Sahasika, the son of Bali Maharaj, who happens to be in the dynasty of Prahlad. So Krishna had promised Prahlad that I'll give abhaya, I'll give shelter to anyone in your dynasty. I'll never kill anybody in your dynasty. So when this Sahasika, because of a story, Durvasa Muni cursed him and so on, which is a different discussion. But he is cursed to appear as an ass demon, Dhenuka. And that's why Krishna requests Balaram to kill him. He does not kill him personally. So this is a reason. Our Acharya, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he analyzes this from a sadhaka's perspective. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has analyzed every particular demon in Vrindavan Leela as representing some anartha, as representing something that is obstructing our advancement. So he analyzes Dhenuka demon, and we'll try to just take in the last part of our class, what is that? So he explains that Dhenukasur, the ass-like mentality, the dull mentality, represents the tamo gun, tamas. Pralamba represents rajogun. Similarly, Dhenukasur represents the tamogun. It represents gross intellect or material intelligence. Intelligence that is very nice in material matters, but zero in spiritual matters. It represents complete ignorance of Shuddha Gyan. So Shuddha Gyan is transcendental knowledge. Bhakti Tattva and Swarupa Gyan. Any information about the spiritual world. So it is mentioned that this Dhenuka, neither he would eat those fruits, neither he would allow anybody else to eat those fruits. So it is mentioned how those fruits then can be compared to knowledge of one's identity, that is Swarupa Gyan, chanting the holy name after understanding the true glories of the holy name, what is this holy name, and worshipping the true object of worship, the Supreme Lord. The fruits can be compared to that, but our ignorance, our tamogun, has such a strong influence on us, it does not allow us to taste the fruits. Just like Dhenukasur, the personification of Tamogun, was not allowing anybody else to taste those fruits, neither he was tasting himself. So it is, in today's shloka it is mentioned, Gamyatam yadi rochate. The gopas, they glorify the tala fruits, they express their desire to have it, but finally they tell Krishna and Balaram, yadi rochate, if you desire, then we will go there. Similarly, we hear from Vaishnavas, we read from scriptures the glories of the holy name. We understand how supremely merciful and supremely attractive is Lord Krishna. So it is like catching the wind that is carrying the aroma of those fruits. Yes? But we are unable to taste these sweet fruits of the holy name. We are unable to taste the sweet fruits of the real tattva regarding bhakti. What should we do? Just like the gopas went to Krishna and Balaram and they said, please help us. If you wish, please do the needful. We want to taste those fruits. Similarly, in our sadhana, sometimes we tend to one extreme that now I know the process. What is it? Chanting 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Yes? We forget that we should also take shelter of the Supreme Lord, that let Him reveal the holy name to us. Krishna cannot be conquered by our efforts. Let us inspire Krishna by our sadhana, strict sadhana, never feeling that my strict sadhana will conquer Krishna, but I will practice strict sadhana nevertheless to attract His mercy. Let me not try to see God, but work in such a way that God wants to see me. Yes? So, when the gopas are attracted by the sweet aroma of the fruits and they go to Krishna and Balaram, it is compared that the sadhaka should not get too much caught up in his own efforts to conquer the holy name or to conquer the bhakti process, but instead, regularly, he should petition the spiritual master. Balaram represents Adi Guru. He should petition the Supreme Lord, Krishna, please help me. I want to taste the sweet fruits of the holy name. I want to taste the sweet fruits, the sweet taste of bhakti. When you desire, when you feel it is appropriate, please do the needful for me. Till that time, I will keep chanting. I'll keep doing my sadhana. If you desire, you can do it right now. If you desire, you can do it later. I'll keep doing my sadhana. So that involvement of surrendering our free will to Krishna and our surrendering our free will to the spiritual master is expressed here. So, that these are some points that we discussed regarding in connection with this shloka. If somebody has any comments, then please comment on this class, or if you have some questions. If Govind Prabhu has some comments. So thank you very much for your patient listening. Srimad Bhagavat Mahapuran ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.